And opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Very much. Yes. The best studio audience in radio right here at Northumberland 89.7. Joining me in the studio right now is the CEO of the Northumberland Hills Hospital, Linda Davis, and with her is the chairman of the board of the Hospital Association, Jack Russell. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Very glad to have you guys back. Now, you were, we had you guys in here last time.
Yes.
We were talking about hospital issues. And, of course, with us in studio is Rob Washburn. He is a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. And he has read the report, by the way, folks. He has read it a couple of times. So, Rob, I'm going to let you kick it off with the questions.
First of all, maybe if you could explain the most recent report that's come out and maybe tell us why it's important to the hospital and to the community.
Sure. As you know, the hospital has struggled for a number of years in terms of the financial challenges, particularly since the provincial funding has been frozen for us. And so we are actually a very efficient hospital, and we were finding it very difficult to balance our budget on an annual basis. We had the conversation with the Lynn in August of 2014 and said, you know, this is going to be an ongoing situation for us. We need to take a closer look. So we did the coaching review. Again, it did not give us conclusive opportunities to say this is a good plan for the future. And so the Lynn suggested we have an operational review for a very good, deep look at the organization. And what the document now that we've put public is the Hospital Improvement Plan, and it is really the response to that operational review and the response to what we can now do to put ourselves on a path to greater efficiencies.
Well, one of the things I remember that came out when the report was first being, I guess, discussed at the Lynn and what the Lynn was, the Lynn said that you guys have already done everything you possibly could do to streamline costs, to make it as cost-effective as possible. You've made all the cuts that you could possibly make, apparently. This was months ago now, and yet still they're not willing to open the purse. I mean, there's got to be a point where they have to be able to say, well, you know what? I mean, it's not even a reward. You're talking about being able to provide the services the hospital needs to be able to provide. You've already got it running as lean as it possibly can. What's the Lynn's response to that?
I think the Lynn has recognized that we are an efficient hospital, and certainly the work that we've done around benchmarking against our peers shows that we are efficient. In fact, benchmark better than 75% of the organizations that this company does a study on. So certainly I think the Lynn has recognized, but they've also recognized, and we've recognized, that there are some other opportunities for us. Each year, I mean, it is in healthcare, it is a fixed pot of dollars. Mm-hmm. And so we are all competing for it, and we need to continually look to be as efficient as we can. So as we get more efficient, other organizations also become more efficient. And so we need to continue to try to move that bar. I think we've also found as we work, and the hospital does do a lot of process re-engineering, really looking at how we're doing things today. Could we do it differently? Could we take some of the redundancies out and create good patient value with fewer costs or littler costs? And that, in fact, is what we're doing, and we will continue to do. So this work is actually taking us, again, a nice deep look, further opportunities for us to gather more.
What are the highlights of the report, then, the big points that people should be aware of?
Jack, maybe you want to start off on some of those ones in terms of the service. And
Well, I think from the board's perspective, one of the key objectives going into this was that making sure that we're doing the right things that the community needs. And we were happy in that the study that was came out from the Hay Group said that this community is getting the services that it needs and no more and no less. And so it basically affirmed that what we're doing are the right things. And so we're happy that we are not having to cut any services. You know, we went through some of that back in 2010, 2011, mm-hmm. and it was very difficult for everyone. This time around, we've identified, or they have helped us to identify, that there are a few areas where we are not efficient relative, or not as efficient relative to some of our peer hospitals, and we'll get those issues addressed.
Do they take into consideration, though, the higher population of older folk in this riding? I mean, we have a catch basin that is very, very different from the rest of the province. Excluding the very far north where they have other issues, not age-related, but other issues. I mean, we have a huge concentration of older residents here, of elders, as I like to refer to them. And we know those people are going to get sick. They try to stay as healthy as possible. But is that something that Lynn is taking into consideration? I mean, we're dealing with people in a disproportionate level than, say, St. Mike's in Toronto or the Toronto Eastern Hospital or the Northwestern Hospital, all of those. We're seeing a higher concentration. It is impacting the services that are required, not just core services. But, I mean, you folks have had to increase specific services related to that core element of patients. Is that something that is being looked at by the province in terms of funding?
I believe it is. And in fact, I think our Lynn recognizes there's several areas within our Central East Lynn. Halliburton as well is another area of high senior concentration. So we're not alone, although we do have a high concentration. So I think they're well aware. I think as well, the ministry recognizes it. The new hospital funding formula that they put in place about 3 or 4 years ago actually addresses that in the methodology that's used to impact funding. So it actually takes into consideration the demographics of the population you're serving. So is it a direct correlation? No, it's within the formula, but it is taken into consideration.
We're talking about 20% seniors. Mm-hmm. In our area and across the Lynn, I believe it's 15%, and across the province, about 14.6% seniors. So, and that's about to double or triple by 2031. So, a huge curve. But I think what I'm most interested in is, you know, you're talking about saving $2.8 million over the next 2 years, correct? And we're looking at reducing the length of people's stay. We're reducing emergency admissions. You're looking at reducing cleaning. You're looking at changing the emergency to something called median productivity. Maybe you could explain that. But, I mean, there's some really critical things. When you talk about taking away $2.8 million, how can we look at each other and say the quality of care is going to stay the same?
I think that certainly is a very good question. And I think what when we looked at the opportunities and certainly what the operational review put forward, there are some opportunities for us to look at, certainly without impacting the quality of care. I'll take, for example, the small unit size. We have a number of small units within the hospital. By consolidating the smaller units into a larger unit, we gain efficiencies of scale. So fewer staff are required once the units are put together. And it's just a matter of looking at where else can we, in fact, gain some of those economies. In terms of the emergency department, it is really the average is what we're going to try to get to. In terms of how are our peers doing, the report and the benchmarking identified that NHH is costs in emergency room are much higher than our peer hospitals, so similar hospitals, similar size, similar types of programs. And so they're just asking us to get to the median, get to the middle of the pack. We're not asking you to be the best. We're asking you to get to the median. And it will mean that we need to look at how we do the work. I think it's fair to say we're not asking people to say you just have to do more with fewer staff. We need to really look again using our lean processes, looking at reengineering what's the work that's being done. We need to look at how we can, in fact, support this. Others are doing it, so we need to look and learn from them as well as how we can do it.
Well, I did get a question from – it was sent through one of our listeners who is asking that why the staffing office was not making phone calls to staff why and not HR. Why was the staffing office making those calls? And why were the directors all scattered when the word came down? So I guess their concern is how staff were treated when these announcements came through. And further to that, services may not be affected, as you said, by frontline nurses, but they're going to have to do more, which is going to lead to potential burnout. Is that something that is being addressed through this?
I think, as I said, what we're trying to do is to really look at the work and determine perhaps that the work gets done differently, so that it's not just asking people to do more with fewer staff. We do recognize that we have to, as I said, to really look at the processes. Do we need to change some things? Do we need to look at where equipment is so there's less walking back and forth to get the equipment? So there's a number of processes that we will, in fact, go through to help identify that we're able to work within this number of staff.
Now, you said a little bit ago, though, that one of the concerns is that the cost for emergency is higher than some of your peers.
That's correct.
Is there a reason why that is? Is there something that we're doing differently for that, or are we just seeing more people into emergency?
I think it's difficult to know the answer to that question, and that's some of the work that we have to do. We have to go to, and we have had conversations already with peers who are able to provide the level of care at a lower cost. So we're going to be talking to those peers to say, what are you doing? How are you doing it? So we can learn from them. So it is a matter of, I think, learning from others that are doing it.
I know at some hospitals, the emergency department is a separate unit, and that the hospital itself really doesn't have a lot of impact on what goes on in the emergency. I've heard that said about a couple of other hospitals. What is the situation here locally?
Oh, I'd have to say, I mean, the emergency department is our gateway to our hospital, and it is very much a part of the hospital. It is, the majority of our admissions to the hospital come through emergency.
Yeah.
The staff work very closely. We have staff who work in two places. We have nurses who work in the emergency room, but some shifts they'll work in the intensive care unit. So there's a good blend.
So it isn't a contracted service that comes in and does it?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, no. These are employees.
I've heard that there are other places that do that kind of thing. Then when you talk about making it immediately or that means there's going to be changes. And, of course, people talk about wait times. That's what normal people sort of worry about. They worry about, if I have a heart attack, are you just going to pack me into an ambulance and send me off somewhere else or that kind of thing? Can you explain how – I know all these things going on in the background mean something and make a difference. But if I go into the emergency, how are these changes going to affect me?
Our goal is that those changes will not affect you, that you will have the same level of care, that our wait times will not be impacted. We are going to be monitoring it very closely in terms of our wait time. Those are all indicators as well that we are judged by the ministry in terms of our wait times in eMERGE. So we need to report that data. So we'll be looking at it very carefully.
How are we doing with our wait times right now? I mean, I know the provincial government for the last 7 years or so has been saying, yes, we are working hard on it. That's the one issue we really want to focus on. How are we doing with wait times at Northumberland Hills Hospital?
From what I know right now is that we are doing very well in what we call our physician initial assessment time. Mm-hmm. So the time from when the patient arrives to the time that the physician actually does the assessment, we've been leaders in the province in terms of that length of time being quite short. In other areas as well, we're certainly within the boundaries of the targets that the ministry has helped for us, as well as benchmarking with our peers and within the LIN, we are within those targets.
By being focused on the bottom line, though, as the provincial government is, how realistic in some of those cases are those benchmarks? I mean, it seems to me like, and we know this because the cost of the budget, of course, they talk about healthcare being a huge part of the budget. But as a taxpayer in the province of Ontario, I mean, we have roads, education, administration, hospitals. We're not paying for military service. You know what I mean? It's not like we need this massive budget for that. I don't have a problem with more than 50% going to healthcare, for instance. Is it time for the provincial government to maybe look beyond that threshold, in your opinion?
I think it's a really difficult one because I think that there's still I believe that there's still a lot more that the healthcare system is going to have to deal with in the future. As you said, the number of seniors, that is going to hit us even more in the future. So I think that we need to, as providers, need to continually look to see how we can provide high level of care within as few dollars as possible.
Yesterday, there was an article in a local media about the Ontario Nurses Association reacting to the report. And while your report says that there's going to be approximately 13 full-time equivalent positions lost, they're arguing that that'll turn out in reality to be about 28 registered nurses. That would be about 17 full-time, about 8 that do job sharing, and a potential loss of 2,000 hours of patient care. How do you respond to that?
At this point in time, certainly the information that we have very solid information is that we know if we implement the initiatives as they're described, we will have 13.17 FTEs fewer worked hours. One FTE is equivalent to 1,950 hours, approximately 2,000. And so there will be that many fewer worked hours. The number of people it will affect is still unknown. We have a process that we go through now with our labor groups. In fact, it's happening right now as we speak, working with our unions, union leaders, to look at minimizing the impact to our workforce. And that is really the goal. We want to minimize the number of the job loss. We know that obviously our usual, through the union contracts, we offer early retirement, and we'll be looking to certainly, as I said, minimize the amount of involuntary separations.
Well, on that note, we're going to take our first break of the hour. My guests in the studio are Linda Davis. She is the director, CEO, if you will, of the Northumberland Hills Hospital. And with her is Jack Russell. He is the chair of the Northumberland Hills Hospital Board. Rob Washburn, as always. We will be right back after this break. And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guests in the studio, Linda Davis from Northumberland Hills Hospital. She is the director of the hospital, and CEO Jack Russell is with us, as well as Rob Washburn. We're discussing Northumberland Hills Hospital and the reports that have just come out. The hospital improvement plan. Rob, you had a question?
Yeah, I did. I just wanted to follow up when talking about yesterday the Ontario Nurses Association raising some concerns. And one of the things that they said when they were talking about the cuts to staff was that it's going to mean each nurse is going to have to give more care to individual patients. So it's going to be a greater burden on fewer people. How do you handle that and give assurances to people who have loved ones in the hospital that that's not going to be the case?
I think, again, as I said earlier, we really want to be able to look at the work that needs to be done and determine how we can change the process, not just asking the same people to do or fewer people to do more work. And that's what we need to do. So from that perspective, I think we will be working with our staff to be able to support those process changes.
Now, one of the things that took place was a number of meetings, and there were lots of times when the Lynn came down and talked to the board. And I'm wondering, where do we see in this report, Jack, that the input from the board, things that you guys asked for that were high priority, where are those manifest in the report?
Well, I think as we reviewed the recommendations out of the Hay report, the staff and the physician group and you know, that whole group of leaders in the hospital put together a number of different suggestions going forward. And the board spent hours going over those suggestions and questioning whether this was going to be able to be done without affecting patient care. Was it really going to be able to affect the cost savings that were projected by the consultants? And hours and hours and hours were spent by board members digging into these to try to make sure that we were going to be able to achieve. And you'll see that as the recommendations came out, there's implementation schedules, there's check marks, we will be going back and looking at each one of those things on a quarterly basis. We're going to be comparing our performance before and after to make sure that we don't slip in terms of patient care, patient quality. And we also have to make sure that the cost savings come about.
Because if you look back over the process, this has very much been a Lynn-driven process. I mean, I know that there's been concern locally, but they've come in and through each report, you see very clearly Lynn saying, this is what we're looking for, this is what we're demanding. At what point can we say, this is what the local hospital, this is our line in the sand, this is what we're doing? Because ultimately, we're taking responsibility. Where's that footprint?
Let me try to answer that one a little bit. You know, many of the recommendations and many of the changes that are going forward have been known for some time and been recognized, but we couldn't make some of those changes because we have been under this review process. We're in a working capital deficit funding formula process with the ministry, mm-hmm. So we couldn't borrow money to do some of these restructuring changes that we needed to do. So the fact that the Lynn has finally come on board and supported us to move forward, and that's what the dollars that they're providing us are allowing us to do the things that, you know, many of the things we knew we needed to do, but we couldn't afford to do.
Mm-hmm. So you had to convince them that these were things that needed to be done.
Yes.
And how difficult has that been, then, convincing them that they, you know, rather than going to some other financial source, that, you know, unfortunately, you guys are going to have to pony this money up, and we have no other way of doing this.
I think through the review, we're actually able to identify that we can gain greater efficiencies. I mean, we're finding $2.8 million over 2 years. That's the target. And the restructuring will probably be about 50% of that, which is one-time cost, and then we're on to those ongoing savings on an annual basis. So I think there it's through the review process, through our hospital improvement plan that we've developed, it's quite clear that, yes, we do need some assistance in terms of one-time cost to help us get forward. But then there's the ongoing savings.
So we implement this plan. How long after implementation do we have a look at it to see that we're getting the results we want? Do we wait a year from now, or do we do the day after? Okay.
It's very.
It's going to be ongoing then.
Absolutely. The board has a mechanism that they will in fact be monitoring the progress. If you want to speak to that, Jack.
Well, that's right. The staff will be reporting through to the board, and then, in fact, the staff will need to report as well to the Lynn on a quarterly basis. So this will be tracked very closely to make sure that we're getting the results that we wanted, and adjustments may very well need to be made along the way.
Why is it necessary that the staff has to report to the Lynn? Like, don't they report to you? Aren't you the body that...
Sorry. The staff will report the results to the board, but then... there has to be a report made to the Lynn as well, because the Lynn is our funder. Mm-hmm. So they have to be made aware of that, and that is a management function to report to the Lynn.
Thank you.
Was there much, I mean, given the fact that the staff now are going to be responsible for maintaining this plan, reporting on this plan, ensuring the plan is followed through, how much input did the staff themselves get then when we were putting this plan together? I know you talked about the stakeholders and the major service providers, if you will, but when it comes right down to the grassroots, I mean, was it something as simple as putting a suggestion box in each ward?
The consultant group actually held focus groups with staff. So they held the town halls, as you know, in our communities, both in Port Hope and Coburg. And then they had focus groups with frontline staff as well as our physicians to be able to gather input from them. And then in the process going forward, there was a steering committee which had representations from the hospital, myself, as well as another representative from the hospital leadership was there at the steering committee working through the information coming forward from the consultant group.
But one of the things with the consultations, though, was that there was some public meetings. There was one, I think, in Coburg where about 51 people attended. There was another one in Port Hope where there's about 37. Then there was some comment sheets. I think there was some telephone things got done. There was a whole bunch. Tally it all up, there was about 180 people that had input. Now, when you think about that, we have an area that covers 60,000 people. Like, that's like 0.3% that had input into this. How do you respond to the fact that there has been public consultation on this? Is that really public consultation?
Well, I guess from my perspective, I think we certainly had, and I don't know whether you were able to attend, but we had some very good input. I mean, people just didn't come and listen. They were providing their comments, their thoughts in terms of where the review team needed to understand our community, the needs of our community. So certainly from the individuals who came out, there was some very important information passed on.
So where is that manifest then in the report?
There is a section on stakeholder. It's actually in our hospital improvement plan, stakeholder engagement, and it is there in the document.
But in the recommendations, in the final report, the things that you're going to implement, where are those suggestions meeting with what's going to happen?
A lot of the suggestions, Rob, were in fact that the services that are being provided in this community today are the services that this community needs. And I think the very fact that the report has come out clearly stating that the services that we're providing are the right ones, it does show that, you know, people heard.
Good.
And very clearly they heard in terms of palliative care. Our community spoke very loud and clear about the need for a palliative care unit within the hospital. So that was also reflected within the report.
One of the things that we've noticed is that healthcare goes through these kinds of transformations, and lots of things are said about the quality that we're going to receive and how things are going to work out. One of the best examples are the community care access. And we know that the Ombudsman has come forward a decade later after it was announced. And, of course, when it was all announced, we all were told it was going to be great. You go home early. You get all this support. It was going to be the best way for people to heal after they had been treated in a hospital. And now we are a decade or so later, and they're saying this is not working correctly. We've got to step back. We've got to reorganize it. And there's a lot of concern about how this is actually working. You're telling us right now that it's going to be okay. We're going to keep our services. We can lose $2.8 million. We can lose 13 full-time people or full-time equivalents. We can do all these things, and it's going to be all right. If I'm sitting at home listening to all this, how am I supposed to feel? How am I supposed to know that it's going to be okay?
I guess I'm relatively new to the community, but I think this hospital has a long history of providing strong quality care and increasing the opportunity for care close to home through partnerships. I think, as Jack has said, the board deliberated long and hard about ensuring that we could potentially put these forward, that we had lots of checks and balances in the system to be able to monitor. Mm-hmm. If something isn't going as planned, then we need to revisit. So I think that I agree with you. I understand your comment. I think, though, history would say this hospital has served its community well, and that's the intent going forward.
How quickly can you respond internally if, say, there's something that's found that's not working well or that is not going the way that you had planned it to? And then what does that take?
I would think it's a very short period of time. We're not a large corporation, so we're able to actually turn things around. We will be monitoring this on a monthly basis, so if indicators are showing that we have some challenges, we should be able to recognize that within a short period of time and make change.
Well, we do have a caller on the line, so we're going to go to that call right now. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
No problem.
You'd asked a question earlier of the CEO, and she skated past it. I'm sure it was just an unintentional omission on her part. Why is it that at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon, you had your staffing office making the phone calls to the staff that were to be laid off when your own HR people couldn't step up and put a little bit of humanity and empathy into it and make the phone calls themselves? 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon? Come on.
Okay, so let me, first of all, my understanding was that we did go out with our discussion with staff on Monday. That was the date that was organized. We knew that some staff would not likely be in the organization on Monday, and rather than hear it from the radio, from peers, we wanted to be able to contact them directly.
So you had the staffing office contacting them at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, asking them to come into HR this week for interviews to discuss moving forward.
I can't comment on that because I'm not aware that it was staffing office. I do know that we had our plan was that we would contact those people that we wanted to speak to directly.
Well, I think you do need to have that discussion with HR because that's just bad form. Now, let me ask you something that hasn't been discussed. Now, maybe it's in your report. My apologies. I haven't read it from cover to cover. But at the admin level, up in your atmosphere, what sort of cuts were done to pay raises and that sort of thing to try and offset the loss of a frontline nurse?
Sure. So
the last time I checked, nobody on the board of directors who don't get a pay and nobody in your department in admin rode a code STEMI to PRHC at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. So I don't know how you guys can be considered to be frontline. So what cuts are you making?
Well, I can, first of all, if I can just speak to the fact that all of my salary and the senior management team salaries have been frozen for the last 4 years. So there's been no pay increases to the senior management team. In terms of the management portion, that's one of the areas that we look very carefully at. The operational review did look very, very carefully at all of our management positions, the percentage of management positions that we have. They looked at us in comparison to our peers and identified that we actually are very lean as compared to peers in the work that needs to be done. In the review, it's recommended that we actually increase by one clinical frontline manager because of the information they heard from staff saying we really do want to see our manager more frequently, and so the operational review suggested that there really needed to be an additional frontline manager, and we've decreased the director position. So that was a one-for-one.
Well, there was a kick-around, too, of team leaders and this and that. I mean, you guys have had team leaders and then not had team leaders and then had a director, had a manager, had a team leader. It's just it's a shell game at times of titles. But one thing that's aside from this, because I know that you didn't really have input like the Hay Group did, but I'd like to ask Mr. Russell and yourself, have you guys ever shadowed a nurse in a merge on, let's say, a Saturday night at any time of the year to fully comprehend and understand what our nurses go through?
That's a good question, and I don't know. I can tell my story, Jack. One of the things that I've done, and
Let's hear from Jack first. He hasn't had a chance. So, Jack, when was the last time you shadowed an eMERGE nurse?
I can't tell you that I've ever shadowed an eMERGE nurse.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Okay, moving on.
Thank you. Can I just comment?
Of course.
Certainly one of the things I've done here in the hospital is that I have shadowed in almost every single department since mm-hmm. I've arrived over the last 2 years. It was one of the key factors that I felt was important. I needed to understand the work. I needed mm-hmm. to understand what their scope. I spent a midnight shift in the eMERGE.
Good.
So I do understand. I understand your point. I think it's difficult sometimes for staff to recognize that we are trying to make their world right. That's our job, is to create the environment for them to do their work.
When you guys remove a lab tech, that means now that nurses are responsible for blood draws and everything else like that to forward to the lab. You're overtaxing an already overtaxed nurse who doesn't get her breaks, doesn't get her lunches, doesn't get or his or her. Nothing's catered for a nurse. So you guys are already taking them and overstressing them from day one of this, not a quarter from now, 6 months from now, phase two from now. I mean, you can tick your boxes, but you've already got overworked, stressed nurses.
Are you an employee at the hospital?
No, I am not, and I did not use my name as I do not want any repercussions to come against my family member.
But you have a family member that works at the hospital?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I want to thank you for your call. I hope we got the answers you were looking for.
Well, I look forward to seeing how many other heads are going to roll at the expense of healthcare. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All righty. So that on that note, we're going to take our next break, our last break of the hour. We will be right back with more of our broadcast here. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political chat, folks. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the broadcast. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. With me in the studio, Linda Davis. She is the director and CEO of Northumberland Hills Hospital, and Jack Russell, who is the chair of the board. With us is Rob Washburn, as always, for our weekly installment of Consider This Live. Rob, you have the next question.
Oh, thank you very much, Dave. I'm curious now, moving forward, some of the things that are going to unfold. One of the things that came out of the public consultations was a call for a walk-in clinic within the community to take some of the pressure off of the emergency department. And there was also talk of reinstating the fast track, which you had some time ago. What's the future plans for those kinds of services?
Well, I can certainly respond to the fast track. What we've had, what we've done is a blue zone within the emergency department. So it is for those individuals as they come through triage, so the less acute that can be seen in the blue zone. And they are, to a certain extent, fast tracked because they're not having to wait in with the full group. So that is still occurring. And in terms of the an after-hours clinic, I think that's one that the family health team is looking at. And again, I probably couldn't comment in terms of where they're at with that.
Is there any plan, though, to that's one of the things is that, you know, we talk about the need for, again, for long-term care within the community. Can you talk a bit about that? What's your role in addressing that issue?
So certainly I think from the hospital's perspective, we are the acute provider.
Yeah.
I think that more and more in healthcare, we are looking to partner with others so that we can provide a good continuum of care for our patients. And that is one of the pieces that we're recognizing. Healthcare, a lot of our challenges come on the transition. So as the person leaves the hospital back into home or those sorts of things, if we don't have a good, strong plan going forward, then that could result in the patient coming back or the person coming back to the hospital. So we're working with community partners to try to strengthen those transitions and provide a strong continuum.
Jack, what can you say from an administrative point of view or from a board's point of view about the way that things are run? Because it seems to me, you know, they're talking about putting the community care piece with the LHINs. But is it, it sounds to me like the hospital doesn't have enough say in sort of, you know, we need a walk-in clinic. Let's get a walk-in clinic going. We need better long-term care. Where are those lobbying efforts coming so that this happens? Because obviously the hospital, the CEO, she can't wave a wand and say, okay, you know, we're going to build a long-term care unit or we're going to create a walk-in clinic. We got to wait for the family health team to do it or we've got to wait for long-term care funding. When are we going to get control of our destiny here so that these services can start to mesh together?
Well, it's interesting. There's a white paper that was issued by Dr. Eric Hoskins just within the last couple of months, mm-hmm. and it covers a lot of the accessibility issues, and it actually, I believe there's an opportunity right now for people to have input into that white paper and the questions that are posed on it. It does give the public an opportunity to say what they would like to see. You know, as a board, mm-hmm. we can discuss these things and we can put suggestions forward to the LHIN, or we can go directly online to the ministry's website where you can provide input on the white paper. But I would encourage anyone who is interested to go and have a good read at that and look at the questions that are being posed and provide some input to it.
When it comes to funding, though, is it fair to say the buck stops at the LHIN? Like, is there no way to go past the LHIN? I mean, right now, as we know, and we've seen the news reports and all this, I mean, as you say, as far as your peer group is concerned, you are running probably one of the most efficient bare bones. You know, it's a gold standard among other hospitals, all of these wonderful things, and yet it still does not motivate the LHIN. Is there a means by which hospital can say, well, you know what, you're obviously not listening or you're not seeing where our needs are. Is there somewhere we can go above there? Can we go directly to the ministry?
If you look closely at the hospital improvement plan, mm-hmm. you'll see that with the money that we're getting this year, we will balance this year.
Mm-hmm.
The changes that we're making, the savings that we're going to achieve, we're not going to be able to balance without some additional help. That has been identified. It mm-hmm. has been discussed, and we do have a willingness on the part of the LHIN to continue to work with us at identifying additional sources of revenue to ensure that we can maintain our sustainability over the longer term.
But by saying that, still 2 years down the road, from all indicators that I've seen, and I have not read the report, but the indicators I've seen indicate in 2 years from now, we're going to be in the same boat, hat in hand, back to the LHIN, saying, you know, okay, this, we told you we were going to need this 2 years from now. I mean, one of the things we know from provincial governments, they rely on strong, stable funding. You know, municipalities rely on that. That's why the gas tax was made permanent for municipalities. And so many other permanent funding mechanisms have been put in place. It doesn't sound to me like there's any long-term funding mechanisms that are going to take into consideration changing times, additional costs. I mean, we know that inflation right now is at 1% to 2%, but additional costs with regards to other services, I mean, the hospital still has to feed their patients. Those costs have gone up exponentially over the last 3 years, in some areas as high as 16%. Is that something that is being taken into consideration with the funding model, or is it just sort of, well, this is the money and that's the way it is?
Especially in light of the fact that the nurses' contract's coming up and the doctors are also waiting for their contracts to be settled.
Yeah. I think we have to recognize that NHH is not alone in this picture. There
exactly.
are many hospitals mm-hmm. that are in a similar position. And I think the ministry has recognized that there is going to be a need for some change. So I think that it is being recognized. Our LHIN has been supportive in terms of working through the process of the operational review, the improvement plan, and as Jack has said, certainly recognizes that our long-term sustainability will require some infusion.
Mm-hmm. Have you taken seriously the suggestion. I know it was made in the report when they consulted with the mayors. They said, you know, could we share payroll and human resources? Or have you looked at doing that kind of integration?
That is work that we have on the work plan. If you look at the report, our first 2 years are really focused on looking at efficiencies internally. And we will begin to look at what else can we do in partnering with others. So absolutely, partnering for payroll, mm-hmm. for finance, you know, those sorts of pieces. Mm-hmm. We will be exploring all of those opportunities with our peers, both locally and regionally.
How about the long-term care piece? I mentioned it briefly mm-hmm. before, but how are we going to, because that's been an identified need. How's yeah. that going to be resolved?
I think it's one that, again, the ministry is acknowledging at the moment that we need to look at a longer-term plan. As you probably have heard, hospitals, many hospitals across the province have a high number of patients who are in hospital but do mm-hmm. not require hospital care. They're considered alternate level of care patients. Our LIN is actually we've just commissioned a study to look at the ALC or alternate level of care percentage of patients in our hospitals, the percentage of long-term care beds vis-a-vis, and I think it's being recognized that there will need to be some movement.
When are we going to see beds in our community?
That's a good question, and it's one that we'll have to stay tuned.
Well, what about the... I've heard two stories people telling about people being discharged that need to find a long-term care bed, and they're being shipped far distances from this area. Is that in fact happening?
We do. There's a process for anyone who, in fact, is eligible for a long-term care facility. The family or the patient is asked to make three choices, and they need to make three choices. Some of those choices may be outside of our region, and so they could be going a certain distance.
And what about the home care piece? How is that going to be resolved? Because I know you were talking earlier about that transition from out of the hospital mm-hmm. into the community. Mm-hmm. How is that going to be addressed over the short term?
I think that's one that we will see the work that's being done, that's being unfolded now in terms of as the CCAC transitions into the LIN. I think there is an opportunity for us to revisit how do we support that transition.
Well, you were talking earlier about some partners out in the community, and that obviously these are the partners you're talking about. Are there any specific organizations that you can point to that you're speaking with?
Well, palliative care is an obviously one. We've been working with Community Care Northumberland, mm-hmm. who is known for their work in palliative care in our community, as well as the CCAC, representatives from other agencies locally, to look at how do we better support our patients who require palliative care, both in the hospital and then into the community. And the LIN has just announced, I think it was in November, an additional $350,000 of ongoing funding to Northumberland County to support a palliative community team. So resources in the community to help that transition and that ongoing support. So enhancing the opportunities that we have now.
What about synergies with Campbellford? Have those been explored, and can we expect to see something on that front?
Absolutely. I mean, we will be talking with all of our partners. We currently have some good partnerships with Campbellford around our PAC system for our diagnostic imaging. We're also working around some pharmacy opportunities. So, you know, I think we continue to.
Well, obviously, the residents here in Northumberland Hills and Northumberland are very happy with the hospital. They could look for more improvement. You can't please all the people all the time. But something I mentioned to you during the break, I mean, we've seen the funding model or lack of funding model in our neighbor to the south. They've just got their Affordable Care Act, which everyone's fighting back on. Now we're seeing a push towards privatization with the National Health Act in Great Britain, which, of course, was sort of the founding basis of our own national healthcare system. How confident are we, or are you, as service providers, that we're going to be able to maintain our healthcare as we enjoy it right now? Or do you see that there's a push? Because I believe personally there's been a push from outside influence, if you will, on governments to sort of move away from the public service model and try and go for the for-profit model. And I believe that that's part of the reason why we're seeing such harsh funding in terms of, you know, the limits and in terms of what's available. Is there a position you can say to the listeners out there that, you know, you're going to do everything you can at the hospital as well as at the board level to try and ensure that public health care is public health care?
Absolutely. That's the public, that's our current Health Care Act, that we are looking at a public system, and that would be what we will be striving to do. I think I also encourage everyone, if I have the opportunity, we also as individuals need to take a responsibility for our own health. I mean, I think that we are well educated, we can have access to the internet, we know what exercise and good nutrition can do for us. Mm-hmm. We need to take some of that responsibility ourselves. And I think that's something that this decade we really need to take hold of. And doing some of those things can, in fact, reduce the burden on the healthcare system.
One of the things that was really interesting about the caller was you get a sense that internally there must be issues around morale and how they're reacting to all of this. What's in place to help and to mitigate this? Because it's, certainly it must be hard internally.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is hard internally. It's hard to make these changes. And we have an employee assistance program, which we have put on high alert. It's there for the employees, any employees to access. We are having our managers more frequently speak and be available to our staff. We're trying to be out and about. I will have more opportunities for what we call our CEO forums for staff to just come and to ask questions to be able to get clarity. But it is a difficult time.
Do you find yourself walking the halls occasionally at the hospital,
yes,
meeting and greeting and talking to staff? I mean, are you that kind of person that people can just come up to you?
That's my hope. I always say in orientation, I don't answer very well to Mrs. Davis, but I'll certainly answer to Linda. I have shadowed, as I said earlier, in almost every department. I think it's important to understand, if I'm going to do my job, I need to understand what's going on within the field. And so my job is to create the environment for those people.
So to be clear, any of the cuts that are being made or being proposed, any of the changes that are being proposed, as my boss used to say, this is a business decision. This is not an emotional experience, even though for you and for those staff, I'm sure there are a number of staff that you've become acquainted to that may have to take mm-hmm. early retirement, because some of this is going to be due, a lot of it through attrition, right?
Yes.
Can we talk about that personal aspect for you? Is this something that is hitting you particularly
I think it's always hard. I mean, I've been a healthcare leader for a mm-hmm. number of years. It's never easy to do these kinds of things. I think that what I look at is why am I doing it? I'm doing it to provide the service to this community, ongoing services that are required. And so with that goal in mind, you move forward and do the things that you need to do.
How's the board going to handle this?
Well, interesting you asked the question, because most of the board members have lived in this community for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
They know a lot of people, they have a lot of friends, and they may have relatives and so on that are affected in some way. It is difficult for board members as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say I had a conversation with a close friend today about the situation, and I could sense that it was working on that individual, and it works on me because that person's a long-term friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And however, we have to maintain as efficient an organization as we possibly can. We're competing for healthcare dollars with other communities and other hospitals and other facilities. We have to do the very best that we can and make sure that we help the vast majority of people in our community and are here providing the services that the community needs.
Well, I want to thank you for being here. My guests have been Jack Russell, the chair of the board of Northumberland Hills Hospital, and the CEO, Linda Davis, of the Northumberland Hills Hospital, and Rob Washburn, as always, for Consider This Live. I'm Dave Glover. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks to our caller as well. We'll be back next time, folks. Dr. Mike.